The Football Show
on Off the Ball
with Sky. Watch Premier League, Women's Super League, EFL, Scottish Premiership, and much more live on Sky Sports.
I'm prepared to anything I can. Well, do it then.
Do it then.
What about your start to the game?
It wasn't bad, was it?
Why should there be an honest answer be a mistake?
How can a modern day manager not have a mobile phone?
Why should he?
Now, let's turn our attention to Leeds United, because it is worrying times at Elland Road. They're currently 15th in the table, 3 points above the relegation zone, but they've just 1 point from their last five games. They've conceded 16 goals in their last four matches, beaten 6-0 last night by Liverpool. Adam Pope from the BBC is with us. How you keeping, Adam?
All right, Nathan. Still a bit shell-shocked after last night, but let's be honest, I don't think anybody is expecting much less than a 3-0 defeat, I would have suggested before kick-off.
Yeah, like, these results happened to Leeds last season in certain matches, but they were countered with performances where they were scoring a huge amount of goals, and were, even in the games where they conceded a lot, they were always a real threat. Like, the obvious one is the Manchester United game that could have been, they could have been beaten 10-6 and it would have been a fair result last season. This time round, that attacking threat doesn't seem to be there, and they are just so porous at the back.
They are, and look, the attacking threat, clearly, when you've got 17 goals missing from Patrick Bamford, who's been injured for, you know, the vast majority of the season. And let's face it, Nathan, with the injury that he has, a fourth injury in the last sort of few months, really, where it's not showing any signs of recovery, you wonder if you're going to see him at all this season. So, attacking-wise and the goals, that's an obvious one that's missing, because they've not replaced him with either by adapting players like Dan James, etc. It's not happening. But defensively, look, Bielsa, the head coach, is not pointing the finger at individual errors. He says it's a collective thing. He takes responsibility for it. But, you know, there was another corner kick that saw, you know, a free header yesterday. That was Van Dijk. And I know the score was at 5-0 at the point, but that's the eighth time that's happened this season. Matip's allowed to go the length of the pitch. You know, individual battles aren't being won. So you have to point your fingers at those situations as well. It's not just a collective thing. But it's a real worry, because, you know, Nathan, you look at Brentford in 3-4, but Leeds are just as similar. And you put the stats out there, they have the worst, you know, defensive record in the division now. That's 56 goals conceded. You know, Norwich are 53, same games played. So massive, massive concern.
Last season, and I don't know if it's fair to compare the two because of the injuries, and they're very different scenarios, but you were able to balance out the good and the bad. And even though they looked open at times, that threat meant that you looked at Leeds in a different way. Whereas this season, you think particularly the games against Manchester City and Liverpool last night, inside the opening 3-4 minutes, you knew in both of them that Leeds were going to get battered. There was, they were just so open. They just looked a shell of the side that was there last season. How much of that do you put down to the absence of Bamford and his work rate up top, but also Calvin Phillips, who was such an important link in that 4-1-4-1 formation, where, you know, providing the defensive cover when he needed to, but also his range of passing was such a brilliant outball. Am I being too kind to Bielsa to say that if those two players are there, Leeds are sort of where they were last season?
I wouldn't say you're being too kind. I mean, the first thing, just going back to the initial point you've made there about the games, the Man City game, you're right. From the second one, they were completely ineffectual against a magnificent side. Last night, I felt they started both halves reasonably well. But once that first goal went in, and I think it was unfortunate, the penalty that was against Stuart Dallas, then you could see it just deflated them straight away. So, that's a concern. Now, is it just a matter of Phillips and Bamford? Well, interestingly enough, probably for the first time this season, Bielsa really sort of alerted us to how he felt about why the defensive errors or the porosity of the defence is occurring. And he said, we don't have a defensive midfielder that we can rely on in the absence of Calvin Phillips. We've tried Robin Koch, but he got injured, of course, with that head injury against Manchester United. And Pascal Strauch's been moved in and out of that position. Although he feels those two are more than capable of covering for Calvin Phillips, he just feels it's not been settled enough and it's been a huge problem. Saying that, though, when you go against Liverpool last night and you're looking at the midfield, you've got Adam Forshaw, who's been excellent since he's come back, and he's had to sort of fill in last night in, if you like, the Calvin Phillips role. It does make me wonder, when you've got Liverpool making three changes in midfield completely, and they're three there from the game against Norwich, and you've got Leeds with Click and Forshaw and Rodrigo, who's not really a midfielder in the sense of, you know, one who's going to be in the muck and bullets and battling to regain possession in the same way as the other two are, then you are almost two against three against, you know, one of the best sides in the world. And that is a bit of a concern last night, I have to say. And, you know, Liverpool eventually got their way and, in all parts of the pitch, were able to go through Leeds. I think Phillips, you're right, will change that. And I think his re-emergence will certainly help Leeds, you know, stabilise and reclaim the ball in midfield a lot more than they have been able to, and prevent the pressure on the defence. And I also think he'll go to, as would Bamford, would go a long way to securing probably the three wins that they need now to stay up.
We've heard a lot from Antonio Conte at Tottenham and their poor run of form recently, and, you know, questioning the players, but also I think questioning the ownership and whether they had that ambition there. Bielsa doesn't seem to have questioned Leeds' ambition around the transfer market, despite the fact that they haven't really brought in huge reinforcements. Even last summer when they spent over 50 million, like Jack Harrison had already spent the last few seasons at the club. It was just the permanency of the loan deal. Junior Firpo was a like for like for Alioski. So you're not adding something to the squad at left back. And Dan James was the one who came in and has done a reasonable job, probably getting more game time up top than he would have expected. But after the success that Bielsa made of Leeds last season and the excitement that was around the club and the fans coming back to the stadium, would you have expected more of an investment last summer and into January?
Look, I wasn't expecting lots, to be fair, because that's not really how he works, is it? He's very selective in what he wants. We know it's a tight squad, Nathan. He likes to bring young players through and get them involved. But the big miss for me, and the bit that is a surprise, that they still haven't replaced or added to the midfield since Adam Forshaw came in, 4 years ago? You know, they've chased several players. Gallagher, they really wanted. He chose to go to Crystal Palace, where he was having a great season, of course, scored again, didn't he? You know, Brent Aaronson's another one that wanted to bring in, you know, in from Austria, the American international. That hasn't happened yet. That could well happen in the summer. We'll have to wait and see. But I'm sure, you know, he's going to be alerting lots of other teams now too. And on it goes. They had a look at Lewis O'Brien at Huddersfield.
So, and that dynamic, Adam, sorry, where I'm talking about Antonio Conte, where it's a totally different scenario, where Conte wants the players. Bielsa is so picky about who he wants. Is there pressure from people above him or around him to go and actually get a reinforcement in midfield? You're talking about four seasons and no first choice midfielder being brought into the club. Is there anyone who has an influence on him to try and say, well, actually, sometimes you got to go at your second choice?
Yeah, well, look, he is very, very particular. Victor Orta is the sport, and you know the director of football, and he's the man that's charged with bringing in the players or offering the solutions that he wants. And they seem to have, it can be a combustible relationship, but it seems to be a very good working one so far. And in the main, it's worked. I think the money's there. I don't think it's a case of lack of money. He has never complained as Bielsa about a lack of investment. In fact, he's bigged it up to say, look, they've spent a lot of money, well over 100 million on players, you know, since he's been there. So I don't think it's a big issue. It's probably a frustration that the perception is that the club isn't doing all it can to try and get these players. I'm not necessarily of that ilk in that thinking. I think he is a hard man to please, but he is open to bringing players in, but they've got to fit the criteria. And if he says no, you know, he rules the roost and that's it. So I'd imagine there is frustration in those that do have influence at the club. But at the end of the day, he runs the football side of things, and his power is pretty much all pervasive there, Nathan. So there will be frustrations, but he honestly believes he's got the raw material to get this club, you know, to where it needs to be. And at the moment, that has to be, you know, survival in the Premier League. He'll have greater aspirations, I'm quite sure. So there is frustration. There's certainly frustration amongst the fans, who, of course, have got an influence because he wants to please them. But he's stubborn and he sticks to his philosophy, as we're finding out. He's not for changing. So there was never going to be a sort of second-choice player coming in January. But I think particularly after the Arsenal defeat and the injuries that were mounting up at that point, which are over into double figures and combined with some suspensions, I felt that was a bit of a game changer. And I thought maybe there should be a compromise, but he isn't. He's not one for compromise, Nathan. So it's not a surprise. However, they do seem very bereft in their ability to change things now at a time where they really need something to happen. They need a spark from somewhere, you know, to give hope that they're going to get through the rest of the season, which at the moment is not careering out of control, but the results are definitely relegation form.
As a forward, again, you only need one chance to ruin his 70 minutes. You have to have that mentality all the time. I only need one ball here, you're in trouble again.
The Football Pod is available every Tuesday, exclusively on the OTB Sports app.
Nicola Pepe has just equalised for Arsenal at home against Wolves with 9 minutes to go at the Emirates. Really well taken goal, spinning on the edge of the 6-yard box. Arsenal have been totally dominant in terms of possession and chances, but Wolves don't mind that and had hung on quite well up until the last couple of moments. But Arsenal have got an equaliser, and well, the big winners out of that would be Manchester United if they both take points from each other. In terms of outgoings and potential outgoings, so much of it, Adam, will obviously depend on whether they're still a Premier League side or not. But even if they are, there's a lot of talent there with a Calvin Phillips, with a Rafinha, even though he'd been out of form and maybe out of the side, and maybe still with Patrick Bamford, though maybe the injuries of this season will have put off some of those clubs. Do you expect this to be a summer where one or more of those players end up leaving Leeds?
Yeah, I do. Certainly this year, with the World Cup being a big showcase for them as well. Look, as I understand it, Calvin Phillips wants to stay at Leeds, and you know his deal for another couple of years, along with Rafinha, is in place. But they need to tie them down longer to protect themselves, because I do think either one or both of them will go before, certainly the summer's out, before the year's out. I think that's inevitable. You've got players who are sort of approaching their prime, if you like, and they'll want Champions League football and everything else that'll go with it, and they've got their England and Brazil colleagues in their ears, etc. So I do think that's an inevitability, that that will happen, to be quite honest, because Leeds are at that stage, Nick, let's be honest, where they're the sort of the club which is the move before the move, you know, because they're not in the upper echelons just yet. And of course, they can make a lot of money on those players. And then what you try and do then is spend it wisely, like some of the other clubs in the Premier League, to an extent, I suppose, Aston Villa, and you try and, you know, build your squad and you move up to the next level. That's the way I envisage it. The other factor that you've got to see, if you're talking about outgoings, will be able to stay for another season, Nathan. And he does year-by-year contracts. He won't discuss it openly with us until after the final game against Brentford. And, you know, who knows the way that's going, how decisive or others that might be. But will the club decide they want to go in another direction as well? You know, will they say, no, we cannot just sort of like not struggle along, but just survive in the Premier League with a thin squad. We want to invest more in the playing squad. You might not agree with that, but we want someone that does that. And we move on and move forward and go in a different direction. I think that's a distinct possibility come this summer. I really do. But, you know, but it may be that they all come to an agreement. Who knows? There's still a lot of games to play. And that's why Bielsa won't discuss it, Nathan. I mean, he was asked the question about his future recently. Leeds are making plans. They've had to make plans, of course, to bring in somebody behind them, a succession plan, because they know that his deal might only last a season at a time, which it does. So they've got to be in a position to move should they not agree, you know, an accord come the summer. So let's face facts, this could be the last one.
It's obviously not good business to have your most important employee in that position, where a couple of months away from the end of the season, you're not quite sure what he's going to do. With that succession plan, what sort of names would they be looking at?
Well, the names that have come up, Jesse March has come up, you know, the American that's worked well in Europe. Valverde's come up as well. And obviously people that have, you know, had some success to an extent in the Premier League. You know, Nuno Espirito Santo's name has been mentioned as well. But who can take over right now, Nathan, right? Say, like, some people are calling for Bielsa's head right now. Personally, they've got to stay with him to the end of the season, because he's the only one who can get a tune out of these players. He's been fantastic. He's been amazing. And at the very least, he deserves that. If you were to replace him now, who could pick up these players from where they are, which is, you know, confidence is low, results are horrific at the moment in terms of the amount of goals that are going against them, etc. Who could pick them up and make sure that they're safe? I think he's the only one that can do that right now. So who could come in and do that now? I don't think it'd be the same person that they'd want as a long-term successor. You know, you need a sort of a Red Adair type scenario, aren't you? Stick with him, I would say. And you know what? Carlos Coburn is doing a fantastic job at Huddersfield Town. Someone who worked with him really closely, and he's got them possibly getting near the automatic promotion playoffs as well, knows the way that these lads have been playing for the last few years. And, you know, has really settled in as a very, very good coach and a hard-working coach in a sort of Bielsa-like ethos, despite him being at Leeds before Bielsa arrived. That may be the way to go forward, or somebody of that ilk as well. But it's a very difficult task whoever picks up the reins from him.
Have you noticed any change in Bielsa's demeanour, in the way he's going about his business as they go through this crisis?
He's been a bit bit curt and a bit snappy, and he's had a few messages to sort of get out there about certain things. If he feels that the press coverage has been inaccurate or has maybe misinterpreted him a little bit. So, but he's done that before, I have to say. What I do, just as you expect him to maybe, you know, really flip or his humility sort of comes across in even greater ways. Like last night, you know, I did ask him last night after the game, I said, you know, are specific questions being asked of you and what's going on here now by the board or by the owners? And he said, no, specifically, no, they're not asked it. But of course, the results will awaken doubt. And I question myself all the time. And I said, do you still have faith in the way that you want to play? Or are you doubting your philosophy? He says, no. He says, I don't think changing the way we play will change the results at the moment. So he isn't going to change going forward. So I don't notice a change in him doubting himself in the sense that his philosophy is correct or is a correct philosophy. It's not the universal philosophy, as he's always very keen to point out. So you're not going to see a change in so you're just going to see him work even harder and take more responsibility to try and, you know, to right the wrongs of the moment, which are many, you know, quite clearly. So do I see a difference in him? No, I've seen him go through these stages before at different times in probably every season he's been involved as well, Nathan. But so am I sensing this is a guy that's like, you know, giving up on as well? No, I think he's going the opposite way at the moment. And he will feel that until that last ball is kicked against Brentford, then the job is 100% committed, which is something he said the other day. You cannot manage at this level without being completely wedded to what you're doing, either as a coach or as a player.
The atmosphere at Elland Road last Sunday ahead of the Manchester United game was just absolutely electric. And, you know, you get that feeling of Leeds of 20 years ago, that big, giant club getting to European semi-finals. But as usual, such the bomb next summer, like, they are still maybe a selling club because of the position they're in. And like, football fans aren't that patient. And I do wonder what the feeling towards Bielsa is and how long the Leeds supporters you feel will be happy just being a club that survives in the Premier League. Like, it's all very well saying we've been out for so long, we're happy just to be there, but we've seen even with the likes of Brighton, the novelty of that wears off pretty quickly. Suddenly you want more and more and more. Is your sense from being around Elland Road that the supporters are happy and accepting of, you know, this is our position in the footballing order right now? Or is there a feeling actually the club needs to start being more ambitious and looking towards European football and a proper move up to the higher echelons of English football again?
You've raised several really good points there. And I think the Brighton comparison is very good. And be careful what you wish for. I mean, Graham Potter, after the win against Leeds actually this season at Brighton, you know, fans were booing Brighton at half-time. It was a poor game, but Brighton, you know, come out and win the game. And like they said, he said, look, they're booing, but we're above, at the time, they were above Manchester United, who had a game in hand, I think. He said, the highest they've been in the Premier League. So be careful what you wish for. As for accepting where they are now, Leeds fans will not accept just being in the lower reaches of the Premier League. And they are impatient, of course they are. But for all you get on the Twitterati and social media and those that are actually caning Bielsa now for playing exactly the same way as they did against Man City last year, where they won with 10 men, you know, at the Etihad, this time they get beat 7-0. They go to Liverpool and heroically lose 4-3, playing the same way. They lose, you know, the same style. They lose 6-0 yesterday. The sensible fan, the fans that are particularly inside the stadium, have got huge support for him, Nathan. They really have. That doesn't mean that necessarily they all see that he's going to stay next season. The plan, if you listen to Raj Vazani, who's still the majority share, was that, you know, after sort of 3 to 5 years, they'll be looking at sort of European football. You're 2 years into that plan. There's a 50% chance, according to the chief executive, Angus Kinnear, that you go down in your first year and your second year. So, they're treading that line very tightly. Next year is going to be the one, really, isn't it, where if they are going to make that serious move, fans will need to see it. And they'll not only see it on the pitch, Nathan, they're going to have to see it off the pitch in terms of the development of Elland Road, which the San Francisco 49ers, who've got 44% of the club, they're going to be heavily involved in that, and they want to build the capacity the same to 60,000. So you're going to see Leeds really going into another stratosphere in terms of stadium, and I would say their ambition as to where they're going to be in terms of a football club. So that's going to start pretty soon. But you're right, fans are impatient. Fans are, I'm not, you can't call Leeds fans fickle, never, you can't. But you've got to be very careful what you read and hear on social media and the gripes. And it's easy to be keyboard warriors and do that. But I do think the genuine Leeds fan that I come across and I listen to the stadium, the atmosphere in the stadium, frustrating as it is and demoralising as to lose the way it is, they do believe in the way that the club is going to a large extent, although some are losing patience with the head coach and what's happening. But that ain't going to change. Next year is going to be the year, Nathan. You know, if they don't see significant improvement, providing they stay in the league, then they really will be getting very, very itchy and very twitchy. And then and it's easy to forget where they were just a few years ago, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know, so.
So a lot, it seems, depends on Calvin Phillips' return, if Patrick Bamford keeps having these setbacks as to whether he can get fit. In terms of Calvin Phillips' ability and what level he can get to if he were to leave during the summer. Like, you've watched Leeds through the years, you've seen some of the greats. I don't think we're at a stage yet of comparing him to Bremner or Giles in the middle of midfield, but he's established himself as, you know, first choice alongside Declan Rice for England. How good is he, and how good do you think he could become if he were to move to, I'm wary of saying a bigger club, but a club that's around the top four, top six on a regular basis?
Oh, I could see him doing that. I mean, it's really interesting with Calvin. I think he's a wonderful player, and he will become, you know, if he continues, if he can stay injury free as well. He's had a few in the last year or so. I think he could truly become, you know, a world class player. You know, he's well on his way to doing that at the moment. He's going to hit his prime over the next 3 or 4 years. It's been a joy to watch him. You know, I've watched him from making his debut at Wolves in a 4-3 defeat. Neil Redfern gave him his debut there, and he divides opinion, or he did do. You know, people who thought that in the Championship, at best, that was going to be his limit. He wasn't even worthy of that, some would say. But Bielsa's made him to what he is. There's no doubt. He's found his position, and he's just taken it to it like a duck to water. And I think in that role, you know, he could really, really, you know, be, well, he's sort of become one of the first picks for England, along with Declan Rice at times. And that's happened very quickly. A truly, truly magnificent player. Intercepts well. Passing range, fantastic. Hard as nails, too. Great team ethic. He's got discipline as well. And he sees things. And he's brilliant at screening his back four, but making play start as well. And I think a wonderful, wonderful talent. And a great guy, a great temperament as well, I have to say. And he's got all the attributes to be a truly top, top player.
Yeah, and a local boy as well, which is...
Which is always great, isn't it? Yeah. They have, look, Nathan, they've missed him. There's no doubt about it. You know, they have. And you've got to say, Liam Cooper's been out a long time. You know, captain who's come through, you know, since the Chileno years, you know, and it also gets vilified quite a lot by fans. But his leadership, I think, in and on the pitch and in the dressing room, I think, much as he tries to keep himself involved, I think they've really missed that as well. So he's another one that's been out for a long, long time. Both of them due back in March. But as I say, Bamford, not sure if we're going to see him again this season. At this stage, there's no sign of an improvement in terms of his recovery.
And what about Rafinha then, who we touched upon as one of those who could go during the summer and who's been linked with Liverpool at times, such has been the quality of his form. Maybe that's gone now with Luis Diaz's arrival at Liverpool and what they've done. But suddenly he finds himself dropped from the team. Was that a controversial decision, or was that just a reflection of where he was?
Well, I mean, I think Diaz is another good example. He's gone into that Liverpool side, hasn't he, on that wing, and he looks like he's been there for years. Rafinha slotted into Premier League life really well, but I think he's had a really bad sort of 6 or 7 weeks. He really hasn't been on it at all. Yesterday, was one of his worst performances personally, and I think on a big, big stage, and if Liverpool isn't, you know, one of his suitors, or any one of the so-called big sides, and he let himself down last night. And honestly, at times last night, his petulance and attitude and body language was not up to standard for me. And we got quite upset about it in commentary, actually. And it was very noticeable. So him being dropped, he was taken off against Everton, where they got, I mean, anybody could have gone off at half-time. That performance was really, really bad. And so he doesn't start against Manchester United. Massive call from Bielsa, and everybody's going, oh, he's lost the plot here, and what have you. But then you see he came on, obviously helped change the game for a bit. They get back to 2-2. Looks something like the Rafinha that we sort of come to love and know. And he's one of the greatest talents I've seen in the Premier League, I have to say. But then last night, you know, it makes you wonder what's gone on. What has Bielsa seen, or what hasn't he liked about him in the last week or so to see it in him that he hasn't been worthy of, you know, a starting place against Manchester United? Because last night, honestly, it was like, at times it was like they were playing with 10 men against, you know, one of the best sides in the world, and it was hard enough with 11. Worrying, but let's not get away from it. He is a fantastic talent and could grace any side in the Premier League.
Apologies if I looked a little bit distracted there, because there's some wild scenes at the Emirates. Arsenal are going to beat Wolves. Alexandre Lacazette finishing off a sensational team move from Arsenal in the 96th minute. Tight angle, just trying to dink it across, almost maybe as a pass. And Jose Sa comes off his right arm. I think it might have gone across goal if he hadn't got a touch. But the end result is the ball is in the back of the net. And Arsenal, it looks as though, are going to beat Wolves, having come from behind. They lead by 2-1. And absolutely mad celebrations from Mikel Arteta and all the Arsenal supporters. And that's a huge win for them. We were talking about what it might have meant for Wolves if they could have hung on. They would have been within 3 points of Manchester United. But it is Arsenal who are going to come away with all 3 points now from the Emirates. And that means in the race for the top four, Arsenal are up to fifth. And they're just 3 points behind Manchester United. And they have 2 games in hand on United, so it is going to go right to the wire. But Arsenal right now are primed to push into the Champions League places, which will be a huge win for Mikel Arteta. Leeds will have a role in that over the next few weeks, particularly at the weekend, because Tottenham aren't out of it. Antonio Conte, the angriest man in football right now. The fixture list for Leeds is, it's kind of hard to know at the moment. So Spurs at home Saturday morning early, then they go to Leicester the following Saturday, they've got Aston Villa, then the match against Norwich, which is one of those that, you know, if you don't win that, you're really in trouble. So it's not the most imposing fixture list over the next month, but also with the way they're playing, conceding so many goals, it's a big problem if you're conceding 3 goals in every match.
It is, and you know, that was the first time, wasn't it, yesterday since 1960 that they conceded 3 or more goals in 4 consecutive games. They actually won one of those games back then, but they did get relegated that season, and that's the form that they're showing because of that defensive frailty. Yeah, this month, I think people were sort of comparing a little bit to December when they were originally meant to play Liverpool. They'd had Chelsea, they were lucky to lose their Arsenal, gave them a good battering at Ellen Road, to be fair. They didn't have to play Liverpool in the end. They got a point against Brentford. This month, obviously, they had to play Liverpool, and you know, it's really come home to bite them. So they've got a point against Aston Villa. Can they get something off Spurs? Difficult. I know Spurs have lost last night, but they did get that victory against Man City. And if Song and Kane are on it and they get ahead, then you can just know that Leeds are going to struggle confidence-wise. So it's a big, big game. I think the two that you mentioned, I mean, Leicester's tough. I know they did well there last year, but the double header with the rearranged game against Villa at home and Norwich at home, absolutely key, I would say, at this stage. And you've got to look at that Norwich game and think that has to be one where they get, you know, one of the wins that they've, or the few wins that they're going to need to stay up, which I still think they will, Nathan. You know, they might still take a few beatings along the way, but I still think they're going to stay up. But yeah, it gets a bit easier after Spurs, you'd like to think. But when you're drained of confidence, and you could feel it, Nathan, when the third goal went in against Manchester United, never mind last night against Liverpool, you just felt all that effort, having got back to 2-2, almost going ahead, you could just feel the air it was sucked out of Ellen Road. And you thought, oh, here they go again, sort of thing. And then there was another one, and then obviously last night too. So it needs a heck of a turnaround. I'm not sure if it's going to happen in time for Saturday, but certainly it's got to be happening again for an early kickoff away at Leicester the following Saturday. They've got to start picking up points very quickly, because we've seen Newcastle, you know, they've done their best to buy their way out of it. I know Trippier's injured. Burnley are digging in now. They're well seasoned at this, aren't they? You know, they've got some great results just lately. I don't think Norwich and, you know, Watford are really going to turn it around. I don't. But Brentford are going to join the party at some point. Everton obviously got Man City this weekend. You know, if they lose that, then they're obviously back in it too. So somewhere very quickly, they're going to have to get just a point, you know, just to reverse this, because otherwise they are going to get sucked in before too. And that, it's a massive fear for fans. It really is. They just feel like, back here for the first season in the Premier League, you know, after such a great season last season, they've been able to watch their side. And, you know, you could be in a scenario where all those new media facilities and everything else that comes with the Premier League, Nathan, never get seen or used, because at the moment they're still in the red zone for COVID areas and nobody's really seen them. And, you know, before you know it, they could be in the Championship like that. I don't think that's going to happen. And I'm being serious about it. I'm not just with my heart. I do genuinely think with my head, even playing like this and being a bit poor, they will have enough about them to beat enough sides to stay in the division.
Never mind the fans worrying about it. Adam Pope is a Premier League journalist. You don't need to be back down in the Championship again,
oh,
Adam.
Man.
You need to be in the Premier League.
It was hard enough in League One for those seasons.
I'd imagine so.
But hey, look, and then, oh, I've got to say this, Nathan, as well. I mean, I've got a lot of my family are Everton fans. I'm from that way originally. And they said, look, you know, you get some people saying it'll be good to go down. I said, no, never, ever, ever think it's a good idea to go down, reform, recollect and come back up. You know, just because some people can yo-yo their way through, it is never, ever good to go down. Mm. And Leeds are the best example of that, you know, having seen what happened to them within, you know, within 90 minutes of return to the Premier League, you know, in 2006, a year later, they're relegated into League One. So it can quickly spiral out of control. And one of those sides tonight, Wolves, you know, did that as well, didn't they? Went down into League One and had to come back up and through. So, no, it's absolutely imperative to the plans, the immediate future of the club and the plans that they have on and off the pitch that they maintain their status, Nathan.
Adam, always a pleasure.
You too.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Sky, proud partner and supporter of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Football Team.